Well, here we are with another edition of My Car Guru. And, you know, I realize, I've got a confession to make. I realize that there's a vast majority of the American people who do not wake up every day thinking about cars. I know when they do, however, it's probably when it's not running right, not working, in the shop, just got wrecked, you know, some kind of an issue that interrupts your life. Or when they're thinking about buying one. And, you know, both of those situations, we talk a lot about on My Car Guru because they're fraught with a lot of potholes. You know, you can get taken advantage of in so many ways in this world. And if you find a good car dealer that you like and trust and you know the people who work in the sales department, you know your salesperson, you actually remember his name, you know, 30, 60 days after you bought the car, it's a good thing to have. It's a good thing to have a car guy. You know, somebody that you can call when you have a question and you just don't have the answers. And, you know, it's just somebody that you can rely on. You know, you have a technical problem with your car, a problem. It's nice to know the service advisors, or at least one. You know, somebody that when you walk in, they say, "Hey, Bob." You know, it's just comforting to know that they know you. And if they know you, they probably know how important your car is to you. Like if you're running a business and you're down, you're out of business, basically. Or if you're a parent, just had a wasp coming after me. You're a parent and, you know, you've got to get your kids to soccer practice and to school and all the other things that they're involved in. And you got to get to your work and you go outside and you turn the key and it doesn't start. And you don't know how to jump it off. And your husband's tied up in meetings. And he won't take your phone calls, and then you start getting all upset. You don't know what to do. It's nice to have somebody that you can call. And a lot of people call. You know, I'm a car dealer. I have a Nissan dealership and a Ford dealership in East Tennessee. And so, you know, my people know a lot of folks. I mean, when they come into the store, they greet them by first name. But occasionally there's a stranger that comes in and they're not real comfortable. You know, let's say they just bought a vehicle from us and this is their first time in the service department. Well, my people know that you only get one time to make a first impression and get to know your customers. You know, it's nice when they walk in the front door and you say, "Hey, Bob," or "Hey, Susie." That just makes them feel good. And then you have to follow through with a quality repair that meets their timetable schedule. You know, they're doing us a favor by bringing their car to us. And sometimes business people in the service industry, especially when customers bring things to them, they don't really get that. They probably instinctively know it, but they just don't act like it. You know, don't you hate it when you go into some business and they act like you're an inconvenience? What do you want? We're too busy. You know, you get that kind of vibe from them. You know, I always tell my service advisors, get out from behind your desk. You know, talk to somebody. Take them outside, walk around their car, find out what they're doing, what the problem is. Get a good description so that you can translate that description to a technician who isn't meeting these people. So, you know, it's all these little things that have to happen, all these dots that have to be connected to make it work so that the customer's life is not interrupted. Because the truth is, it doesn't take much, and you'll agree with this, it doesn't take much to run somebody off. You know, and as I mentioned in a show a few weeks ago, that you don't realize what that costs you. You know, you sell a car to somebody, that may not be the last car that they buy. The average person, I know probably, I don't know, 25 years ago when I had a sales meeting and I was explaining that the average person will spend somewhere around $400,000 to $500,000 on automotive related purchases in their lifetime. Well, that number's probably a lot higher than that now. As cars have gotten more expensive, people are financing cars for longer terms. Repairs are more expensive. Gasoline's more expensive. And so, you know, when that person comes into your dealership and they want an oil change and a tire rotation, and you do the oil change, but you forget the tire rotation. And they get home, and the husband notices that, or the wife does, or whatever. Then you've fallen a notch, and you may not get them back. We can't trust them. They didn't rotate our tires, and they charge us for it. So those kind of things do happen in businesses. They happen in car dealerships. It probably happened to you. What do you do about it? Well, I just think it's about relationship. I think you need to give people the benefit of the doubt at least a couple times, but not too much. You need to complain. It does them a service, and make sure you're complaining to the right people, because if you're not, it doesn't do anything. You know, don't complain to your Facebook friends. Complain to the people that have the power to make you happy. You know, all the Facebook friends can do is commiserate with you, you know, and throw mud at in the same direction. That doesn't solve the problem. Develop a relationship. Get to know the people. Get to know them on a first-name basis. And, you know, buy them a baked chicken or something, you know, for Christmas. I tell you what, it pays to have experts. I have a plumber on call. I have an air conditioning guy. I have an attorney. I don't like calling him very much. I've got, you know, a banker that I do business with. I've got a network of people. If I want something built, I know who to call. And they know me, and they know what I like. And maybe that's easier in small-town America. I know things like Angie's List and stuff like that were created to vet people who do work. And that's valuable, you know, to get opinions. And, of course, a lot of people use Google ratings and all that stuff. And that's important to be able to pass that information on. But don't go, you know, don't go raining on some business without giving them the opportunity to try to fix it. That relationship is critical, and I would encourage you to nurture them. Okay, I'll take my first break. I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, one of my goals today was to educate a little bit. Now, some of you are more sophisticated than some of the stuff I'm going to talk about. And if you find yourself getting bored, then you can always listen to another podcast or radio broadcast or something. Go walk the dog or do whatever you want to do. But now the majority of you don't know that much about cars. You don't, like I said at the beginning, you don't wake up in the morning thinking about them. And I do, since I am a car dealer, but I just love cars too. I restore cars. I've got two really cool projects going right now. A car hauler. It's a 2010 F450 chassis that I stretched 7 feet. It's going to be something I can take to car shows. But I didn't know. I didn't use an F450 body. I put a 1949 Ford F4 body on that truck. And it is beautiful. And we are getting close. It's been a two-year project, maybe a little longer. But final wiring is being done right now, and we've got to mount the gas tank. That's going to be a big sucker. We took a 54-gallon tank off this F450. I don't know why it had such a big tank on it. And, of course, it held diesel fuel, and we're converting it to where it'll haul gas for me. A lot of gas, because it's going to need it. It's got a 429 Thunderjet engine that has that was pulled out of a 1968 Thunderbird and was rebuilt. We put ceramic headers on it. We put a serpentine belt system and a fuel injection system on it. And it's going to have air conditioning, and it's going to suck gas like crazy. I'll be lucky if I get 8 miles to the gallon. Ask me if I care, because I don't. You know, it's going to be so pretty that I'm and so functional for me, because I've got these other cars. I'm restoring a 65 Mustang convertible right now. I bought it, didn't look at it close enough, had a lot more rust than I thought, but we're just right there at the finish line. It's going to be white with a red interior and a black top. It's going to be beautiful, have air. I decided to go automatic with this one so the more people could drive it. There's a lot of people that can't drive manuals. Can you imagine? But anyway, I want to do a little geography lesson, a geography lesson on the car. So I'm going to start with a few, with some of this terminology. We'll just start in the A's. I went through this list and I said, nah, they don't really need to know that. Sometimes you need to know where you are, what you're talking about, so you can describe something. Well, the car's top of a car is divided into either three or four sections. If it's a car, typically it's going to have a windshield, right? And it's going to have a little post right there beside the windshield. And then right behind the driver, it's going to, and between the rear seat, it's going to have another post right there. And that separates the front from the back. And then you're going to have a third post that goes around the back glass, right? So that's a typical car. Well, those are not called posts. They're called pillars. The A pillar, starting from the front, goes around the windshield. That's the A pillar. The B pillar is the next one. The C pillar is the third one. And then if you're driving an SUV and it's all the way back around the back glass, then it's going to have an A, B, a C, and a D. So sometimes when you take your car in and say, yeah, my car is leaking around the D pillar on my, Ford Explorer. And they'll say, oh, well, okay, we know exactly where that is. But if you say that it's leaking somewhere along my roof, you know, on my car, then they may not get the leak fixed because they're looking in the wrong place. Another term that comes up, and you see it actually impacts vehicles more than people think, is aerodynamic drag. You know what that is? That's the resistance that air has against your vehicle when it's moving, you know, through space. Not space, a highway, but that's space. Anyway, aerodynamic drag wouldn't be a problem in space, would it? But it is here on Earth, and so we have to pay attention to that. I have an F-150. I lifted it. I explained that the other day. It's an F-150 power boost. I didn't like the way it was sitting. You know, they have a natural rake. Basically, they're lower in the front than they are on the back. A lot of people leveled their trucks. Well, I leveled it. That wasn't good enough. I put bigger tires on it. And now it looks really good, but it gets about 5 miles per gallon less than it did. I see a lot of people complaining about that on forums and stuff like that. And they say, my gas mileage went to pot, you know, when I lifted my truck. Duh, you affected the way that the air hits your vehicle. So it's not going to get as good a gas mileage. That's what aerodynamic drag does. Just keep in mind, if you're going to modify your vehicle, tires, wheels, you know, lift kits, something like that, if you're going to put running boards on something, bigger mirrors, you know, put a bicycle rack on the top, all of that's going to have a negative impact on your aerodynamic drag. It's like having a parachute pop out the back. I'll tell you another, getting to the bees here, a question that comes up. I had a lady said, Lanny, I got my car in the shop and they want to replace the ball joints. What's a ball joint? Well, that's a really good question. A ball joint is basically a flexible joint that consists of, just imagine a, you know, ping pong ball size thing, and it's basically in a socket. It has a threaded piece that comes out the top of it. It's used primarily in the front suspension because it can accommodate a lot of different motions. It's used in the suspension, the steering, and ball joints have to be replaced because they get old, just like me. Let's go into the C's. You know, if you're going to have a front end alignment or a four wheel alignment, you may have some wisecrackers say, ma'am, your caster is off. Well, you don't really know what that is. I mean, you just came in for a front end alignment. And so there's three basic measurements on any type of alignment: the caster, the camber, and the toe. Toe is just, you ever seen somebody walking and they're pigeon toed or they're, you know, walk like a duck? Well, that's the actual, the toe in or toe out. So that's what your tires are doing. They're kind of towing in or towing out. What do you think the impact that would have on tire wear? That's correct. It would wear your tires out quicker. And if depending on if it's towing out or towing in, it would either wear on the outside edge or the inside edge. We got to inspect those tires, folks. Caster and camber are just two other measurements. One of them has to do with the tilt of the tire either into or out away from the car, the top of the tire kind of leaning out. Now, you know, you'll see a lot of race car drivers, they'll adjust the caster just so that they can get better. They might adjust them on both. They might have negative caster on one side of the car and positive caster on the other. And that's because they're always going around in a circle. And that makes sense, but you're not going around in a circle. And you want to make sure your tires wear well. As far as alignments are concerned, once a year, get it done. It'll save your tires. And really, an alignment job shouldn't cost you more than, I don't know, $70 to $100. What's a new set of tires cost? Some of them are pretty cheap, but, you know, you can make your tires last a lot longer. But the number one thing you can do to make your tires last longer is just keep them inflated, folks. You're going to lose 2 pounds of pressure every month in your tires. So unless you use nitrogen in your tires, pure nitrogen, then you'll lose 1 pound of pressure per month. So you think about it. If you get your oil changed once a year, 12 months, you've lost 24 pounds of pressure in your tires and they only hold 35. That's why you got to check your air pressure at least once a month. You know, go to AutoZone or someplace like that and buy one of those digital things. And I have one. And I just go around to I do it with my lawnmower, my motorcycle, my four-wheeler, my side-by-side, and all my the other cars I keep at my house, which my wife gets upset about. She'll get over it. Okay, that's something that's important to do. What's a chassis? You know, I had a lady one time said, and it's not always ladies, it's men too. What's a chassis? You keep talking about the chassis. What is that? Well, folks, that's a general term that refers to all of the mechanical parts of a car that is attached to the structural frame. I mean, in cars with unitized bodies, that's where there is no frame. You know, if you pick up a body and a bed of an F-150, there's still going to be something there, and it's called a frame. And it looks like a ladder. If you were to, you know, take it and lean up against the wall, you could probably climb up it. It's a ladder, and they're very strong. And you see those other vehicles that have to do a lot of towing. All commercial vehicles have frames. You know, some SUVs out there still have frames, like the Ford Expedition, Chevy Tahoe, Suburban. They're a body-on-frame construction. Whereas the rest of us, or the rest of the vehicles out there, are unibody, which means that they don't have that frame. The body itself has structure on the inside that you know, all the doors and fenders and stuff are mounted on. It's all one piece. It's just stamped, a stamped floor, and they go in there. Have you ever seen the robots that coming in from the side and welding everything? That's what they're doing. They're welding together a unitized body. It's a very strong structure. It does well, but it doesn't do well under really heavy towing circumstances. So that's what the chassis is. Somebody says you have a unitized body, unitized chassis. That's what they're talking about. It's just one unit. A body on frame is a different kind. Okay. Let's go inside the motor for just a minute. I know this is slow. We're just in the C's. You know, there's several key components of an engine. You got the engine block. You've got the crankshaft, which is mounted inside the engine block. You've got pistons going up and down, and those pistons are connected to the crankshaft. And then the upper part of the engine, you have the cylinder heads, and they have a different function. And then you have an intake manifold, and for the exhaust, you have exhaust manifold. And those are the basic components of an engine. Now, all of these things are separated by gaskets, all right? Have you ever heard of a blown head gasket? Well, when I'm talking about the cylinder head, in a four-cylinder car, there's just one. That's where all the valves and everything are located in one. But if it's a V8 engine, it's got two cylinder heads. It's got one on the left side. It's got one on the right side. And there is a gasket that's in between the cylinder head and the block itself. Now, none of these things can work without each other. But when they're all put together, there can be issues with the gaskets that are between those components. That was hard for me to get out. So a head gasket, blown head gasket, can wreak havoc on your engine. Number one, if it blows to the outside, you're going to smell a lot of coolant. Sometimes they'll start leaking first. And if you start smelling coolant in your car, and it's that sweet smell, you know what it smells like, right? It's just kind of sweet. Don't want your dogs to lick it, though. It'll kill them. But anyway, if you smell that, probably going to be either a leaking water pump or it could be like a leaking radiator hose. Hopefully it's something minor like that. And you might be able to see where it's dripping from. Get up underneath your car, put a cardboard box, just slide it up under. This is before you go to the repair shop. Just slide it up under there and see if there's any drips overnight. And if they're greenish or orange, you know, some of the different coolants are different colors, then you've got a coolant leak. And if it's dripping, it's leaking a lot. Now, if it's dripping, or it's leaking between the cylinder head and the block, that's a big problem. And you need to get that addressed before you drive the car anymore. Maybe even have it towed in. But that's going to be hard for you to see. And a shop. But if you smell coolant and you can't find where it's coming from, please take it to a shop near you and get it fixed. Now, I had an internal blown head gasket on a, 1976 Buick Electra 225 with a big old 454 V8. It only had 16,000 miles. Yeah, no, 12,000 miles on it. I mean, it was like new. I didn't think anything was going to be wrong with it, so I bought it. I was going to flip it on Bring a Trailer, you know, one of those auction sites. And so every time I drove it, though, I could drive probably 10 miles and then it would overheat. And they could not figure it out until one of my guys said, wait a minute, let's see if there's any exhaust gases in your coolant. I said, wait a minute, how would exhaust gases get in my coolant? He said, well, you have an internal blown head gasket. Oh, okay. So they tested. Guess what? Exhaust gases in my coolant. And so we had to take the head off, put a new gasket on there, and that solved the problem. Ended up selling the car on Bring a Trailer. And doing really well because it was such a low mileage, kind of a rare car. Remember when cars were big, the big Electra 225s? They call them deuce and a quarter. Those were the good old days in some ways. Cars are so much better now. than they were then. Don't let anybody tell you that cars were a lot better back in the old days, because they weren't. They were a lot of them were junk. But I tell you what, the nostalgia can work wonders on your mindset about stuff, can it? All right, I'm going to take my last break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, one other thing I want to talk about is a term that's thrown around in a lot of service departments. You know, when you come in and you say your car is missing, it's not running good, it hesitates, you know, it's not getting the gas mileage that it should get. A lot of times the technicians will refer to that as a drivability problem. You know, it's just attaching a big word to a lot of different things. But basically, when they're talking about drivability, it's the general kind of a qualitative evaluation of how the powertrain is operating versus, you know, how it's designed to operate. You know, it could include the transmission even, or the idle smoothness of the engine, a cold and hot starting, a throttle response. You know, you put your foot on the gas and nothing happens. Or the power delivery is just not there. Sometimes it'll trigger a check engine light, and sometimes it won't. So check engine lights, service engine soon, they're going to say different things. That doesn't mean you need to pull over and stop, okay, folks? That just means that something has been sensed by one of the many monitors on your car. And there's all kinds of sensors, everything from the sensors sniffing your exhaust pipe to monitoring fuel regulation to coolant. There could be so many different things. A transmission issue can turn on a check engine light. So the important thing is to not go to your, you know, like a little parts place and let them put their little gadget, plug it into your OBD port, and tell you how many codes you got and what they might mean, because that does zero for you. You just wasted. You could have gone to a movie or something instead of that. Go to a dealership that can actually diagnose the problem, because those little tools that you can buy, well, you know, I can look on the internet and Google it and all that stuff. Yeah, you can, but you know, you're not a skilled technician. You can't fix it, and you don't know what's behind the other things that's causing that check engine light to come on, because you may fix the first problem, but that light's still on when you crank it up. It's because something behind it was bad. That's just what you needed to hear, isn't it? So drivability is, you know, that's basically what we're experiencing when we drive a car. And when it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, it's a drivability issue, and that's how it's referred to in the auto industry. But diagnostic charges, you know, your doctor charges you when you go into his office, whether he finds anything wrong with you or not, doesn't he? Well, it takes up his time, and that's all he has to sell is time. And that's the same thing with the technician. That's all they've got. And if, you know, if they spend an hour trying to figure out what's wrong with your, you know, what's triggering your check engine light, they deserve to be paid for it. So don't freak out. Just find out when you go into the service department, what is your diagnostic charge? Normally, it's going to be 1 hour of labor. So if it takes them, 45 minutes to do it, they're still going to charge you 1 hour. Why they do that? Because some technicians are slower than others. And the average is about an hour. Now, I know the guy from AutoZone or someplace like that can come out and plug that little thing in your OBD port and tell you what your check engine light is saying in about 2 minutes. It's not the same, folks. It is not the same. That's like going to the veterinarian for a heart murmur for a human. You know, it's just something you don't do. Well, anyway, hopefully some of this information, we'll get to more of this list because there's some things that I think you folks need to know a little bit more about when you go into the car dealership and they tell you you got a blown head gasket or your ball joints are worn out. So that's the kind of stuff that you will learn here on My Car Guru. I'm a 44-year veteran of the auto industry. My name is Lenny Lawson, and I am currently a Ford and Nissan dealer. So I'm a real-life car dealer with a twist. I tell it like it is. Send me an email, 423-552-2020 if you want to text me. If you want to email me, it's Lenny, L-E-N-N-I-E, Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N, 2020 at gmail.com. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.